Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, let's play a little trivia. Do you know what Florida's state animal is? Think about it. All right, if you guess the Florida panther, you're right on. But do you know how it became the state animal? Well, the Florida panther is the central character of Craig Pittman's new book called Cattail, The Wild, Weird Battle to Save the Florida Panther. The book tells a story of how Florida's state animal was at the brink of extinction. Over the course of his environment reporting with the Tampa Bay Times, Craig interviewed a group of oddball characters, including a panther hunter, biologist, and veterinarian, that were essential in saving it. Cattail is Sundial's Book Club February title. We recorded our conversation with Craig at an event this past Saturday at Books and Books in Coral Gables. And you can see the Facebook Live of the event and join our book club by going to Facebook and searching for the Sundial Book Club.
I grew up in Pensacola, up in the north end of the state, where if there's wildlife, you hunt it. And we didn't have any panthers up there, so I didn't really pay much attention to them. But when I started working at what was then the St. Petersburg Times and covering environmental issues, one of the first stories I wrote was about panthers. And I thought, wow, this is pretty cool. And the more I wrote about panthers over the space of about 20 years, each time I'd think, wow, this story is great. This would make a great book. There's oddball characters. There's twists and turns in the plot you wouldn't expect. But it didn't have an ending. I had to kind of wait. And finally, about 3 years ago, I got a good ending. And I thought, okay, now I can sit down and write.
But as you're putting it together, I mean, how did you decide, or maybe it was the publisher, how did you decide how you wanted to organize it? Was it just a chronological story? Was it that easy? Or because, I mean, look, yeah. The character is the panther.
Yeah. I started off writing it all chronological, and then I realized, no, I need to have the most dramatic scene of all. I need to put that right at the beginning of the book so people would see that and go, you know, wow, this is pretty amazing. And so the book actually opens with a prologue where they're chasing down this panther with dogs and trying to hit it with a tranquilizer dart, and things go horribly awry. And I think that kind of helps set the tone for both the characters and the plot.
There is also a scene, too, by the way, where someone gives CPR to a panther.
Mouth-to-mouth.
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 Yes,
yeah,
mouth-to-mouth.
Which, honestly, is a commitment to the job you seldom see in America these days.
That is true.
Yeah.
You know, the two things about this book, I mean, it talks about kind of the attitudes that people in general had about the panther since it's changed.
Since
people have started settling in Florida.
Right.
And also the different characters. But let's talk about that, because the first people who start coming to Florida pretty much look at the area as a wasteland. Let's tear it all down, drain it, kill everything in it, because we got to develop.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden attitudes change.
Right.
And it was the same with the panther, because at the beginning everybody just wanted to hunt it. It was in the way.
Yeah. I mean, if you go back to our original inhabitants, the Calusa, the Tocobaga, they venerated the panther. They thought it was a divine being. In fact, the Seminoles thought it was the first thing ever created. But then the Spanish came, and they referred to them as lions and catamounts, which, by the way, is a great term I would love to see brought back. And then our early settlers were absolutely petrified of these things. They thought that they would come in and kill all their cattle, kill all their scrawny children, you know, and just wipe them out. So whenever they saw a panther, their first reaction was to shoot it. And like you said, a lot of people just sort of said, you know, let's get rid of them. The legislature even had a bounty on the panther's head for a while of $5 per head, which in our dollars would be $100. So, you know, you can see why a lot of people shot panthers. But then, you know, we got to the point of where people started being concerned about the environment, and the big event in Florida was the effort to build what they call the Everglades Jet Port. They wanted to build, the Miami-Dade Port Authority wanted to build the largest airport in America in the middle of the big cypress swamp, because they figured, well, nobody lives out there, so nobody will object, right? But an odd coalition of hunters and activists and people who just like the Everglades got together, and they recruited this old woman in a floppy hat named Marjorie Stoneman Douglas to help them, and they managed to stop the jet port and preserve Big Cypress, which, as it turned out, was one of the last remaining pieces of habitat for panthers. And that sort of started to change things in Florida. Should I go on or should
I
stop?
Well, okay. you could go okay. on, but then they wouldn't buy the book because you just told the whole story.
That's true. Spoiler alert.
But, you know, I mean, it's fascinating when you see that side of the story and you see how attitudes of residents, the attitudes for residents change over time, and all of a sudden there's this love and compassion for the species and for the Everglades, and now people want to fight to protect it. But there's so many fascinating characters. All of them play an important role. Without mm-hmm. them, we probably right. don't have the panther.
Yeah.
I want to talk about my favorite one, Roy McBride.
He's a great character.
He was a hunter. He was a hunter, and mm-hmm. they brought him in to help protect the panther. When this is a guy who spent his life basically killing them.
Right, right.
So, all right, so explain that one. How in the world is a hunter? He had a change of heart?
Roy's this fascinating guy who he grew up in Texas, in very rural Texas, and he told me that where he grew up, you only had three choices for a job. Either you worked on the sheep farm raising the sheep, or you chased down the predators that were killing the sheep, or you left town. And so Roy became a guy who hunted the predators. He became an expert tracker, an expert hunter. He knew how to find wolves. He knew how to find the mountain lions in Texas. And so when the Endangered Species Act passed, panthers were on the original endangered species list, along with, you know, manatees and key deer. And a lot of supposedly smart Florida officials said, well, we don't think they belong in there because we think they're already extinct. We think you're wasting your time trying to protect them. And so the World Wildlife Fund hired Roy for $500 to come to Florida and see if there were any panthers left. And he found one, a scrawny female. He found signs there might be others. He figured there might be 20 tops left in Florida. And Roy is like my Zelig, you know, like the Woody Allen movie. Every time there's an important thing that happens involving panthers, Roy was there. He popped up playing this important role. And he told me that he had sort of shifted his sympathies because he could see what the sheep were doing to the landscape in Texas where he grew up. And he got to where he kind of liked the predators more. He'd started thinking like them and following them around. And so when he discovered there were still panthers left in Florida, he became this guy that they turned to a lot in trying to study them and learn about them and figure out what they needed in order to be protected and saved.
He's really a colorful character. I love the way how you write to describe who these people are. And I made the joke with you. I said, if you made a movie today, mm-hmm. what actor, and I didn't specify, alive yeah. or dead, what actor yeah. plays him?
That's the key.
Who did you pick?
I think it was Brad Pitt, but looking like he does in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he's kind of got that weathered look, like, you know, like Robert Redford, like he's somebody's been tanning his hide for a while.
And I said, he is the typical Chuck Connors guy.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who he is, please, he's
the rifleman. He's the rifleman.
He has that that Western American man
yes,
look with the broad shoulders and the big
yeah.
jaw. He's that guy.
He was also an airplane.
How did the panther become the state animal?
Oh, this is a great story.
I love this one.
All right, so there was a move afoot in the legislature to name a state animal. And the guy who was then the Secretary of Education for Florida, a guy named Ralph Turlington, whose nickname is Ralph Turtleburger because he talks so slow, Turlington thought it would be smart to have the state's school children vote on what should be the state animal. And so he drew up a ballot and sent it out to all 67 counties and said, please have your school children vote on this. And the choices on there, they had some write-in spaces, but the choices were the alligator, the manatee, the dolphin, and the panther. And nobody expected the panther to win. But this was at the same time that the state's first panther expert, a guy named Chris Belden, who had never actually seen a panther, was trying to find where the panthers lived. And so he was going on this very public quest to find panthers and asking people to help him. He was giving speeches. He was writing articles for magazines and so forth. And every time these things would run, they would run a picture of this beautiful panther, this sleek predator. And it sort of caught the public imagination, and people started really sort of falling in love with this beautiful panther. And so the fact that there was this beautiful animal and then it was very endangered really caught the public's imagination. And so when the kids voted, they voted overwhelmingly to make the panther the state animal. And it surprised everyone. And so then they sent it along to the legislature in 82 to ratify it. And some of the legislators refused. And they said, everybody knows the gator is Florida's state animal. I think they were all UF grads. The school children went nuts and bombarded the legislators with angry letters saying, how dare you try and overturn our election? You asked us what we should pick. This is what we picked. Don't back off. And they said, okay. And they approved it. They officially, in 1982, made the panther Florida state animal. And as a result, the panther started getting a lot more attention from the legislature and from scientists. And that's really, I think, what saved them is the fact that they were the official state animal, and it would look really bad for Florida if the state animal went extinct. So that's why I say the school children really are the ones that saved it.
That was 82. Do you remember what age group they were sending, what age, grade level they were asking kids?
I think it was like fourth or fifth grade. Fourth a friend of mine told me he remembers this, and he remembers that in his class, the teacher actually picked different kids to speak on behalf of each animal and to get up and give a campaign speech and say, this is why you should pick my animal. Now, this I should add, by the way, that there were some write-in votes. The monkeys did really well, even though they weren't on the ballot. But ultimately, we got the panther.
You're listening to a conversation that we had with environment reporter Craig Pittman at Books and Books in Coral Gables. He's the author of this month's Sundial Book Club title, Cattail. You can join our book club by going to Facebook and searching the Sundial Book Club. Let's return to that conversation.
Have you ever seen a panther? Live, in the wild.
Not in the wild, no. It's on my Florida bucket list, but no, I have not seen one in the
wild.
But
you have seen one.
I've seen four in captivity and one that had been run over.
I want to ask the audience, anybody here ever seen a Florida panther in the wild?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've lived in Florida 40 years and I haven't, so, mm-hmm. You know, it's on my list as well.
There aren't any in Coral Gables, I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
That we know of.
That's true.
That we know of.
All right, so look, I mean, you know, we've heard the numbers over and over, mm-hmm. over the years, that at one point it was almost extinct. Mm-hmm. Now there's way less than 200, right?
They estimate between 120 and 230.
Okay.
But the point is, the official estimate in 1995 was 20 to 30, and now we've got 10 times that many. So they're clearly doing better now than they were before. They're not doing great, but they're doing better.
And this is the challenge for the state,
yeah.
is how to protect them. They have they're in their territory, but we're also driving through that territory.
Right, and now the legislature wants to build a whole bunch of toll roads, one of which would cut right through what's left of panther habitat.
They've tried reducing the speed limit, but that hasn't really helped.
No. The only thing that really helps are the underpasses that they built, but those are really expensive to add onto the roads. And I should mention, by the way, the first time they built an underpass for the panthers, the DOT was very skeptical that this would work. And so the state biologist put cameras down there with motion sensors so they could detect what animals were using it. And they found, yes, sure enough, panthers were using the underpasses, and so were a lot of other wildlife, bears, foxes, raccoons, and one guy in a gorilla suit. This is Florida. It's going to happen.
most panthers, though, we tend to find down in the southern part near Cypress, Big Cypress.
Yeah, really, Backahatchee Strand.
But
that
there
area.
Are some that they have spotted up
they're,
further north.
Well, the males are very wide-ranging animals, and we had one that actually went all the way from Collier County up to Georgia before a deer hunter unfortunately saw it and freaked out and shot it. He was prosecuted, by the way. But the males travel a long way, and that's part of the reason why it's tough to protect their habitat, because they need so much room to roam around.
What do you think about the future for the panther?
When I said I was waiting for a good ending, what I meant was a hopeful ending.
Okay.
And the book, I'm not going to say it has a happily ever after by any means, but it has a hopeful ending to it. Panthers are very adaptable animals. They're part of the puma population, which I think exists on every continent except Antarctica. And the way it's been warming up, they may move there too. But they're very adaptable, they're very resilient, and as long as we continue sort of paying attention to what would help them, I think that's the key.
All right, so I mean, I'll be a little bit of the naysayer, because I mean, one of the chapters talked about the fact that we just keep developing. Mm-hmm. It's just Florida keeps developing.
Right.
This is a story of Florida Gulf Coast University.
Yes.
And
that was sort of the poster child.
The state wants to build a university, mm-hmm. and a very wealthy man says, "I've got some land. You
can
have it." Ben
Hill
Griffin III.
Mm-hmm.
Who, speaking of Florida, his father's name is
on the stadium at UF.
At UF.
Yeah.
He had all this land in Southwest Florida. Says, mm-hmm. "You can have it." And they wanted to build the university.
Right.
But a lot of people said this is a terrible place because there were panthers living there.
Well, and it was really, really swampy as well. In fact, there was some speculation that the reason he donated is because he couldn't build on it. But he wanted to build on all the land around where the university would be. And this would give him the perfect excuse. It would be a seed that would sprout all kinds of development. And so initially, the Fish and Wildlife Service was going to say no to this. And the Corps of Engineers also, which is in charge of protecting wetlands. And he called in some favors. He called in favors from the state's Republican senator at the time, Connie Mack, and from the Democratic senator, a guy named Bob Graham, who had a sterling environmental credentials, but here's a major campaign contributor asking for help. And so they convened a meeting at the Fish and Wildlife Service regional office in Atlanta, and overturned what the ones in Florida had said. Their reasoning, which they wrote out in a memo, was Florida will be developed.
That's why I'd be a little bit of the devil's advocate in that you have, because you pointed it out in the book, you have politicians who, yes, on one side it's like, well, we got to do the right thing and protect the habitat.
But Panthers don't vote.
Protect the Everglades.
Or make campaign contributions.
And then on the other side you have when you got a guy that wealthy who can make a couple of calls, make this happen.
Yeah.
I mean, so how are you hopeful? So hopeful.
Well, bear in mind that at the same time the feds were doing that, they were also buying up land to create the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge, which is not huge, but it's a start. They actually preserved some land from development specifically to save the panther. And they hired a guy who was in charge of cultivating the deer herd there to attract panthers there because that's their favorite thing to eat. I mean, the panthers love deer the way I love Oreo cookie ice cream. So that has actually been a big success.
I got to ask you about this. I can't let you go without talking about skunk ape. First of all, remind everybody of what...
Do you guys know who the skunk ape is?
Yeah. Okay,
all right. Florida, as far as I can tell, is the only state that has not one but two Bigfoot relatives living here. We've got the Barden Booger in Central Florida. And then, of course, we have the fabulous odoriferous skunk ape in South Florida. And the skunk ape makes an appearance in this book, or rather the guy who owns the skunk ape research headquarters in Okeechobee. Research headquarters meaning you can buy t-shirts there. And in addition, he and his brother have a petting zoo there and a campground. And I mentioned the campground because I found out recently that that's where a lot of the python hunters stay during the day. They stay at the skunk ape research headquarters campground when they're not out, you know, battling these big invasive snakes. But they had a panther that was treating their petting zoo like it was the buffet at Golden Corral. And so they decided they were going to catch it. And so they staked out a goat that they were going to, you know, try and tempt the panther. And well, of course, that's animal cruelty, and they wound up being criminally charged for it. Apparently no skunk apes were harmed during this, so that's the good news.
There is an effort to protect the wildlife. Yes. We're trying to restore the Everglades, the coral reefs in the Keys, and the Florida panther. But I don't know. I mean, do you think we're doing enough?
Here's the thing. Since the 2010 BP oil spill, and even more so with the red tide algae bloom we had that went for 16 months, I think people in Florida are starting to realize that in Florida, at least, the environment is the economy. And if you screw up the environment, you're going to screw up the economy. I mean, lots and lots of people suffered terrible economic losses as a result of both the oil spill and the red tide bloom. And it has become a sort of a potent political effort to try and get the government to do something about this. I mean, we actually saw people heckling Rick Scott when he was running for senator, calling him Red Tide Rick. They actually heckled him into leaving one of his campaign events because they were so angry. And meanwhile, Ron DeSantis, as a candidate, said, I'm going to do something about the algae blooms. We're going to convene task forces. We're going to spend money on research. And he has actually followed up on that. Now, is he going to do the things that the task forces recommend? We'll find out when that happens. But the fact that that's now a potent political issue, I think, should give us all some hope.
I know this book just came out, but what's the next one? What are you working on?
I would love to write a book about the pythons, but I don't know what the ending is. I mean, maybe them swallowing the entire state.
Craig Pittman, it's such a pleasure. Again, it's great to have you as our February title. Ladies and gentlemen, Craig Pittman.
Thank you.
That was Tampa Bay Times environment reporter Craig Pittman. He's also, again, the author of this month's Sundial Book Club title. His book, Cattail, follows the story of the Florida panther. Now, we asked some of our book club members, have they ever seen a Florida panther live in the wild? And some of you responded. Mark Hedden saw three at the same time, once, a mother and two cubs. Mark, I'm so jealous. Tabera Lush says, I wish. Adrian Gonzalez says, I have, on the beach 10 years ago while at Lauderdale by the sea, right at the end by the sand. Don Davies, I saw one once when I was a kid. We had a cabin in the Everglades. Well, I am jealous. 40 years living in Florida, never have seen one in the wild. I hope to do so at some point in my life. You can always join our book club by going to Facebook. Just search Sundial Book Club. Ask to join. It's free. Let us know if you're reading the book, what you think about it. Also, tell us about some of the other things that you're reading right now. Well, that is Sundial for this Tuesday, February 11th. Sundial is produced by Chris Remington and Alejandro Martinez. Our engagement editor is Katie Lepre. Our news director is Taryn Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman is our editorial director. WLRN's program director is Jason Zabka, and our technical supervisor is Peter J. Maris. Don't forget that you can download a podcast of this program always. You can listen whenever you want to. Just search WLRN Sundial on your podcast app. All right, well, tomorrow there is no Sundial. We have a special best-of program because of the school board meeting, so no live show. But coming up on Thursday, back in 1969, eight black college students staged an eight-day sit-in at Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania. That sit-in spurred conversations around the country about representation on college campuses. That sit-in is the focus of a new book, Seven Sisters and a Brother. Marilyn Holyfield was one of those activists and wrote a chapter in the book, and she'll join us in studio. Also on the show, we're going to be talking about how safe it is to walk and bike around South Florida. A 2017 National Highway Traffic Safety Administration report found that Florida is the most dangerous in the country for cyclists. Are our streets safe for people who don't drive cars? What more could we or should we be doing to make it safer? Send us, by the way, your story, your experience. Just text us 305-602-2646. Again, 305-602-2646. Let us know. Tell us your story about what it's like for you daily when you're biking or walking or making your way around town. Standard messaging rates apply, by the way. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Again, tomorrow, Best of Show. We're back live on Thursday.